From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, an ethics reform measure approved by the legislature at the end of the legislative session still hasn't been signed by the governor. Our political observer Alan Chartok will share his thoughts on that and the governor's relationship with state Democrats. And a local mayor and a congressman joined forces to call for additional federal funding for brownfields. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. An ethics reform measure approved by the state legislature at the end of the legislative session still has not been signed by Governor Cuomo. And some good government groups say it shouldn't. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
During a year where both former leaders of the legislature were sentenced to lengthy prison terms after they abused their sources of outside income, Governor Cuomo said he'd seek to strictly limit lawmakers' ability to earn extra pay. Cuomo also proposed closing a campaign finance loophole involving limited liability companies that factored heavily in the corruption trials. But the governor could not win agreement on either issue. He instead introduced a measure to force independent expenditure groups made legal under the U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United decision to more fully disclose their donors and relationships with candidates. Cuomo spoke about it earlier in the year.
You can't share staff. You can't share an office. You can't share non-public information. You can't knowingly both happen to hire the same media man and or media woman. That's what the law would do.
Most New York candidates do not rely on super PACs for funding. The final bill, passed in the middle of the night on a Friday in late June, also included requirements for small, not-for-profit groups. They'll have to more fully disclose all of their donors. The threshold for groups having to disclose their donors to the state's ethics panel was lowered from groups spending $50,000 a year to advocate for an issue to groups now spending just over $15,000 each year. Any donor who gives more than $2,500 would need to be reported, compared to the previous limit of $5,000. Government reform groups say that provision would have a chilling effect on the ability of small organizations to lobby state government. Susan Lerner is with Common Cause.
Here, what we don't have is a balancing between the public's need to know and First Amendment and privacy rights.
Common Cause already makes public all of its donors on its website and so would not be affected. But it might make it harder for the group and other government reformers to band together with smaller interest groups to try to change government and clean up corruption. Reform groups were harshly critical of Cuomo and the legislature during the 2016 session for failing to enact more fundamental changes that could curb what they say is a rampant pay-to-play culture. Lerner could not comment on whether the new bill is payback for their actions, but she says the super PAC bill is largely a distraction.
This is such a huge missed opportunity and such a deflection. Public corruption and the question of ethics in Albany is at the top of everybody's list. Poll after poll shows that voters care tremendously about corruption in Albany. And this bill is not designed to address the root of the problem. There's nothing in it that deals with the legislature. There's nothing in it that deals with the governor or the executive. It's all about somebody else.
A spokesman for Governor Cuomo, Rich Azzapardi, in a statement essentially accused Common Cause and others of being hypocrites. Everyone is all for transparency, except when it comes to them, Azzapardi said. Lerner says even the new super PAC regulations do not go far enough. In New York City and in some neighboring states, super PACs are required to clearly disclose their funders in their television ads. New York State's legislation does not require that. The bill has been sent to Governor Cuomo. He's expected to act on it soon. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, the ethics reform measure approved by the legislature at the end of the legislative session still hasn't been signed by the governor, and some good government groups say, well, it shouldn't.
Well, that's right. Look, David, this legislature and this governor have a history of coming up with nonsense and saying that this is reform. It isn't. This governor came into office saying he was going to clean up Albany. He didn't. He is now standing in the center of a circle. All his people around him, or many of them, have been served with subpoenas by Preet Bharara. There are ways to clean up this legislature. One of them is to do what the Congress has done and say there's a strict limitation on how much you can make in outside income, because we know that a lot of people go to legislators in their other capacities and give them money, and that this is a form of insidious ethical problems that many of us have watched over the years. It is precisely the kind of thing that gets Shelley Silver into trouble and got him convicted, of serious felonies. So, yes, they should have done the right thing. They didn't. They came up with pablum. And as a result, they're going to be facing public criticism for being the denizens of the deep that they frankly are.
You mentioned Preet Bharara in your remarks. We were witness to a Daily Mail saying that, quote, America's toughest prosecutor acting on the Clinton Foundation?
We do know, David, that there was a report in the Daily Mail that Preet Bharara was looking into the Clinton Foundation. Then we attach that to the idea that we heard Hillary Clinton say that it was too early to tell whether in her administration this top crime fighter would be reappointed to his position. Then we see the thing in the Daily Mail. And what does it say? It says that they're looking into the actions of the Clinton Foundation, and that is Preet Bharara again. So no wonder we're hearing from the Clinton people that it's too early. What bothered me was when Chuck Schumer said much the same thing, and Chuck Schumer, of course, has always been a prime sponsor of Preet Bharara. So something's up here, and I have a feeling nobody wants to upset the apple cart before the election. But after the election, I think both on the state and federal level, you're going to see some interesting things happening.
There's more evidence that the presidential race may be affecting which party controls the Senate outcome. That's according to a new Siena poll. Currently, the GOP is holding on, Alan, with the help of one Democrat who meets with them. But nearly two-thirds in this poll of voters think that Donald Trump at the top of the ticket will not help.
Oh, that's for sure. Look, there are going to be a lot of people who show up, and they're going to be smart and bright, and they're going to know who their state senator is, but most people don't. And most people don't know who their congressman is. So they're going to show up for the Hillary election, and they're going to say, I'm here for Hillary. And they look down and say, well, I'm supposed to vote on all these other things. Let's see, I don't know any of them. But one's a Democrat, one's a Republican. I think since I came to vote for Hillary as a Democrat, I'm going to vote for the Democrat on ticket. Look, this is not my musings. This is what happens. And when you have a close election, or when you have a presidential election, more Democrats come out and vote. And that should help the Democrats reclaim the New York State Senate. Of course, there's a lot going on. We have all along suspected that this governor is comfortable with a Republican Senate and does what he can to make sure that it stays. I pointed out that he said he was going to veto the bill which allowed them disgracefully to draw their own districts. He didn't do it from the very beginning. He hasn't reined in the five or sometimes six disaffected Democrats who have made their accommodations with the Republicans in order to keep the Republicans in power. So the stench goes on. Now, of course, this governor is in big trouble with his liberal constituency, and he's been trying to erase that deficit. He almost got beat by Zephyr Teachout, which he did, in fact, upstate, but not in New York and Queens. So this is going to be tough because he's going to be running for a third term soon, and he has to worry about what people think about him as to whether he's, in fact, a real Democrat or a, phooey Democrat.
After a couple of audits, one by the state comptroller of New York, Thomas DiNapoli, who you spoke with this week, the governor has engaged in some back and forth, we'll say, and an article talks about Cuomo and answering criticism with personal attacks, including with many of his fellow Democrats.
Well, look, this is not a guy, Andrew Cuomo, who plays well in the sandbox with his other chums. Sooner or later, he gets around to everybody. In that way, it's been pointed out that he's a Trumpian, in that he just lets them have it. And there's an old saying around Albany, attributed apocryphally, of course, to Andrew, if you're not me, you're not good. So there we have it. He's after Tom DiNapoli, a wonderful civil servant who is just doing his job, auditing all of these things which have been, you know, there's a lot of subpoenas flying about the very things that Tom DiNapoli is auditing in the Cuomo administration. And of course, Cuomo's people are striking back. And that's the way that it goes. But Tom DiNapoli is a smart guy. He's beloved in Albany. People really like this guy, and he's just doing his job. He took a cesspool of a controller's office over, and he made something respectable out of it. So, there's a certain amount of ho-hum. There goes Andrew again.
Legislative Gazette political observer Ellen Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A local mayor and a congressman have joined forces to call for additional federal funding to remediate brownfields. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there.
Today, our waterfront is precious real estate, but there is a new use of the waterway as a recreational trail, as one that creates a quality of life for the given community, a marketing tool for Cohoes.
Congressman Paul Tonko, a Democrat from the 20th District, and Mayor Sean Morse spoke Tuesday at Cohoes City Hall, pushing for an increase in brownfield remediation funding from the federal government. Tonko has introduced legislation in the House to increase funding for the brownfields program up to $600 million annually by 2022.
Which is the Brownfield Reauthorization Enhancement Act. It takes the brownfield program that has been structured into law and reauthorizes it in a way that offers some reforms that I think are very beneficial to our local communities, and then ups the ante, if you will, gives more resources to this very worthy program.
Tonko says the program, managed by the Environmental Protection Agency, funds environmental study and cleanup assessment projects that support economic redevelopment, planned and sustainable land reuse, and environmental justice.
In Cohoes, we have the brownfield opportunity. What we need is brownfield capital. We want to have the opportunity to take some of these beautiful pieces of land that we have that need to be remediated. We don't have the funds to remediate some of these beautiful pieces of land that we have.
Morse foresees the waterfront as an economic center. He has toyed with the idea of moving the Cohoes DPW site to free up land along the river for development. But the site is laden with chemicals.
When you have developers look at these properties, the first thing they say is, how do we afford to clean up all of this problems that these lands have? We want to have the ability to clean these properties up, bring in the developer, and let him spend his capital on investing in the city of Cohoes.
Moore says in the past, developers have bypassed Cohoes for major projects and adds that freeing up land to develop can better position the city and lighten the burden on taxpayers.
When you have developers look at these properties, the first thing they say is, how do we afford to clean up all of this problems that these lands have? We want to have the ability to clean these properties up, bring in the developer, and let him spend his capital on investing in the city of Cohoes.
Moore says in the past, developers have bypassed Cohoes for major projects and adds that freeing up land to develop can better position the city and lighten the burden on taxpayers.
In every small community, Cohoes is not immune to it. We have to live under great pressure to be under a 2% property tax cap. We are dealing with how many times can you go back to the resident and raise their taxes just to maintain the vital services that we need, fire, police, recreation, garbage pickup. The only way that we can survive is to broaden our tax base. And the one thing that you run out of is land. And you run out of land because a lot of it is polluted and nobody will invest in that land. If you're a developer and you have $15 million to invest in a project and it's, you know, $2 million to clean up the land, you say, well, I guess I got to keep looking. This is going to allow the people who live around these sites to see an increase in the value of their property. They're going to see a community that is growing where they want to come and live. And you're going to see businesses who would once walk away come and invest.
Tonko says multiple sites in the Capital Region currently benefit from the EPA's Brownfield program.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. Following last week's declaration that Stewart Air National Guard Base in Newburg is a state Superfund site, people are now wondering what's next. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation declared Stewart Air National Guard Base a Superfund site some 3 months after the public learned of PFOS contamination in the main source of drinking water for Newburg, Washington Lake. The next step, according to DEC Acting Deputy Commissioner of Environmental Remediation and Materials, Martin Brand, was to identify the U.S. Department of Defense as a potentially responsible party for the contamination detected in the area, asking them to help fully investigate the site, determine the nature and extent of contamination, and start developing any interim remedial actions or full remedial plan. In a statement, an Air Force spokesman says, quote, "The Air Force has a long history of working with communities under the Superfund process to address environmental issues and protect human health and the environment. We will continue to collaborate with regulators to address the issue," end quote. Then there's what comes next after that. For Newburgh City Manager Michael Caravino, a primary concern is discharging the contaminated water from Washington Lake. Here he is speaking just 3 days before the Superfund declaration.
In other situations, we know this firsthand, that the DEC would require a capture pretreatment before release. And so the direction we're asking for is, in order to pump this water out, do we need to pretreat it? And if so, please give us the guidance as well as the resources to do that. We don't want to dump PFAS into the Mudna Creek and affect drinking wells possibly downstream from us.
The DEC's Brand says the state Superfund program can be brought to bear here.
We're working with the city to evaluate options for drawing down Lake Washington, and we'll continue to work with the city to address those concerns. We haven't come up with a full plan yet for that, but we're working on that. The expenses associated with that and, of course, the construction and maintenance of the filtration system for the water treatment plant is right now being covered by the state. Of course, we will seek to have the responsible parties come up with those costs in the future. And again, as the investigations continue to the nature and extent, we'll be developing further remediation plans, including any interim remedial measures to address the contamination, and we'll keep working with the city on those.
Caravino says a forecast rainy season has him concerned the lake could overflow, and he's worried about spending $300,000 on the following.
We are about to purchase diesel pumps for Washington Lake because as we no longer use Washington Lake for our fresh water, the water level here rises. Our fire chief has advised that we need to preemptively reduce the level so that we don't risk a spillover with a high-hazard Class C earthen dam that's over 150 years old.
The city now draws water from the Catskill Aqueduct, paid for by the state. Meanwhile, Riverkeeper spokesman Cliff Weather sees the following as next steps.
The next logical step is to take care of the residents there and to call for blood testing to see the PFOS exposure that the residents may have. And the second step is to actually try to restore the watershed.
In January, the Saint-Gobain facility in Hoosick Falls was declared a state Superfund site. Residents have since been blood tested, and a state Senate field hearing is scheduled for August 30th. A State Department of Health spokesperson says in a statement, quote, "The state is actively seeking technical guidance from the Federal Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry regarding the feasibility and potential public health benefits of launching a blood testing program in the city of Newburgh. Should the facts support moving forward with blood testing, we will be formally requesting financial support from our federal partners, including the Department of Defense, as a responsible party," end quote. The Superfund site declaration was the latest action to come out of Governor Andrew Cuomo's Water Quality Rapid Response Team.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. For the first time since the close of the state legislative session, leaders of the New York Racing Association met in Saratoga Springs this week. The thoroughbred racing track off to a strong start. The NYRA board is again making its push for reprivatization. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
At Wednesday's meeting of the NYRA Reorganization Board, Chair Michael Del Judas began by expressing his desire to bring the organization that has been under state control for the last several years back to a private nonprofit in 2017.
The legislation, as you know, to revert to private was postponed, so we'll take that up after Labor Day with the governor's office and the legislative leaders, and hopefully January, either in the budget or separately in a bill. We look forward to coming up with agreement among all three parties and us in terms of privatization. So that obviously is the number one item on the agenda for next year.
Drivers on the Adirondack Northway have no doubt noticed the billboard that reads "Whoa Cuomo," posted by the Concerned Citizens for Saratoga Racing Group. It backs the reprivatization plan offered by the NYRA board and overwhelmingly approved by state lawmakers in June. The groups could not come to a final agreement with the governor's office. The deadline for reprivatization has been pushed back 2 years already. Saratoga Springs-based NYRA board member Georgie Nugent agrees with Del Judas.
I truly believe it's long overdue, and the organization has proved over and over again through their actions and what we have done with getting it to a point where we deserve reprivatization. It's the right thing to do for horse racing.
Also at the board meeting, NYRA president and CEO Chris Kay reflected on the first half of this year's Saratoga meet.
The results through the first 16 days are encouraging, particularly when you look at the handle at other racetracks this summer. And it probably goes without saying that we did not prepare the 2016 budget with the expectation we would meet, let alone exceed, the record handle of 2015.
So far this season, attendance is up 1.2% over last year's record-breaking season. All-source handle is up 1.5%. NYRA attributes the increase in handle to the growing popularity in remote betting. The organization recently launched its NYRA Bets program, which allows users to place bets from their mobile devices while sitting in the grandstand or their living rooms. Tony Olivato is president of NYRA Bets.
There was a stat that almost 50% of people that are watching television are watching with a second device in their hand, either a tablet, their laptop, or their phone, that they're checking emails, they're on the internet while they're watching television. And what's great about NYRA Bets is people can open an account and they could play from home while they're watching the races. So we make that connection between online and live television and give people a chance to play.
While the racing season has proved strong so far, as with any outdoor sport, officials are keeping their fingers crossed for great weather.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1634. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.